Today is the 14th of February 2017, and I'm interviewing Ross Denton of Havelock North, a retired pharmacist, and Ross is going to give us some history of his family. Thank you, Ross.
Well, originally I suppose it's fair to say that the family is a wandering family, in that my great-grandfather came out on the ship China in 1856 and settled in Wellington. He came through firstly at Nelson and then went to Wellington and worked in Wellington for an ironmonger, and also out in the hut he worked for a general store. His actual training was as a watchmaker, so he spent a fair amount of time repairing watches and so on in his spare time. He eventually had 11 surviving children of 12. My grandfather was the youngest of those. In about 1860 or so, 1861, 62, about then, he returned to England to set himself up as an ironmonger. He settled back in Wellington in Willis Street, and he conducted the business there as an ironmonger for many years. Ironmongery, sports goods, as I understand it, jewellery and Mary artifacts. He's very successful. He built quite a substantial house on the terrace in 1873, and he finished his life there, and he died in 1910. My grandfather was very much the youngest of the family. His brothers were much like older siblings to him, and he married Nellie Daniel of Marston, where he'd been working at the time for the Vinon Company. For some reason or other, he decided he wanted to be an accountant, and he spent some time getting his exams. I understand he wasn't allowed to pursue Nellie until he'd got them. And he decided he was going to ship up into this general neck of the woods to set up packs, despite being told that it was very parochial and he wouldn't get a look in. But he was looking apparently at Waverley on the other coast and Wairoa and Hastings, and settled on Hastings for whatever reasons at the time. And imagine all those places wouldn't have been much bigger than each other at that time. And he settled up. It was quite a struggle. He married my grandmother in 1911. They first set up house in Brooklyn while he was looking around for what he was doing. They eventually got here in 1912, set up his practice. And that practice is still going, although under the name of Markins. So he was a sole practitioner for many years. He lived in various houses in Hastings. My grandmother, being the daughter of a timber merchant, would never look at a house without ripping it to bits of stone, which she did several times. Eventually, they bought a house that they had their eye on at Chamber Street in Havelock North. They bought that in 1932, just after the quake. They'd had their eye on that particular house for some time, and apparently it came up, and so they bought it. And that house is still in the family. My sister and her husband have it still. So since 1932 till the present day, it's still owned. What will happen to the next generation, who knows?
What was your sister's name?
Judy Webster. Judy and Robert Webster. Nice. Webster's long.
That's a grand home.
Yes.
Beautiful big section.
Yes. Three quarters of an acre. There's not too many three quarters of acres. Six of that. Fortunately, in some ways, I was to have got that place, but timing was wrong in terms of my father's retirement and so on. And it's probably just as well, because I probably couldn't have afforded to keep it up the way the Websters have done it. So that's fine. I'm welcome in their house, they're welcome in mine, but we don't bother each other too much.
Yes.
So definitely happy where we are, we stay where we are. My father, in the meantime, had grown up. He decided to be an accountant, and he studied in Wellington for a while, and then came up just before the war to join his father. Then he got called up for war service, and so he was away from the business for about 4 or 5 years, I gather. And then, and this is the reason why I was personally born in Palmerston North, because he was stationed at Linton at the time. He was apparently fairly shy. My grandmother was a bit of a force to be reckoned with. She couldn't see that either of the kids could possibly marry out of the family sort of thing. They both did, of course. Yeah. But they used to go for a holiday down in Paparam, and Dad caught a sight of these three smashing-looking girls, and was too scared to think about it. To one of my aunts, who was a very forceful character, just like my grandmother, basically twisted his arm, made him write my mother a letter, and the rest is history, and that's why I'm here. So he never actually left the country. He was in the army for that length of time, and he was trained for the desert, but never left. He was an accountant. They needed him in the pay corps and various things like that. And also his eyes weren't too good. They had eyesight, which I've inherited. So he stayed the entire war in New Zealand and then rejoined his father. He took early, this was not retirement from the army, early dismissal, whatever the word is, because the war was winding down. He could see it. And he said some of his mates could see it as a good job for the future sort of thing. But as far as he was concerned, he wanted out. So he got early out. He became commissioned as a first lieutenant in that time. He came back, rejoined his father, and worked there for the rest of his working life.
Early discharge.
Early discharge, that's the word. And I'll say discharge, not dishonorably, But here he was maintained that my grandfather's business, while it was a good business, really never got going until he did, and he was very good at getting new business and so on. And the business gradually grew, and Brian McKay was a partner, Paddy Donovan, who was a partner right through, Ernie Williams, who eventually left under a bit of a cloud, and at other time, Eric Anderson, who was getting old and wanted to retire, but he still had his son coming on, so Edie Anderson and company joined the firm. My father always maintained that at that point the business got less personal because it became so much bigger. They were one of the early ones with a computing system, but I gather Dad didn't see eye to eye with that, but of course nowadays we can't get on without computers. So he worked through till he was 65, which would have made him about 1977 or thereabouts he retired, and then lived through to, he died eventually in 2003. So he had quite a good innings as a retired person. Yes. And he had a very good business and good contacts and so on, and kept going in that way. And I was born in Palmerston North, as I said, in 1943. But the family at that time came to Havelock North, probably would have been 44, I suppose, but when I was about one or thereabouts. In those days, I understand the population of Havelock was about 1,500. I always understood it was 2,500, but I gather it was smaller than that. So I grew up there, went to the local Havelock Public School, but I was a scholastic disaster area, which my parents were very concerned about, quite rightly so too. So they sent me behind us for a couple of years. In those days, it was Form 2 and Form 3. And so I did those 2 years, and it gave me 1 year. I dropped back in arithmetic and English, and then sort of doubled up. By the time I got into Form 3, is about where I should have been. One of the things I was very grateful for is I had 1 year of Latin, and that was so much help for English later on. It's absolutely brilliant. I think I was a bit privileged to have that. So 2 years at Harrowth, and then my father had gone to Wairarapa College, mainly because his father was on the founding board of Wairarapa College, his grandfather was. He went to Wairarapa College, and I think they felt that boys' school was desirable, right or wrong, and they couldn't afford Wanganui or Christ, so I finished up at Nelson College, and was there for 4 years. Bit of a square peg in a round hole, but however, it's ancient history. Not all of us enjoy these things much, but however, I was there and survived, so that was it. But eventually, for no particularly good reason, I decided I wanted to be a pharmacist, and there's absolutely nothing in the family to point me in that direction, but in fact, I ran into a bit of opposition from the family in that one, but I went ahead and did it. And it took me 3 years for a two-year course, and a couple of years apprenticeship under... Well, I started under Mate Richardson in Richardson's Pharmacy in Hastings, but Mate died about halfway through that, and I finished off under his son, Graham. And during that time, my now wife, she was working for Trevor Willis, during the school holidays, so she wanted to be a nurse and left school early. And then one of her best friends, who eventually became one of her bridesmaids, decided she was going to be a pharmacist and persuaded Anne to do that, but she had to go back to school so she'd get a bit of extra science, I think it was. So she went back and caused a bit of a stir at school when she went back in the second term, got right through and went to pharmacy school, and she got through in 2 years, which was probably fairly equivalent to what. Three more. Then she came back and did her apprenticeship under Ian Kerr, and it was Ian Kerr Pharmacy in Heratona Street. So anyway, Anne, during this time, she'd come in, and I think she might have spent a very short time working in Richardson's. I asked her out, and she wouldn't come, of course. It took about a year before I could persuade her to come out. It just so happened there was a pharmacy school ball on in Petone, and Anne had a regular boyfriend at the time. For some reason or other, she didn't have a partner, neither did I, so we teamed up. And so the rest is history, really. So we're still together after coming up 50 years, not quite, yes. 47, 48 or whatever it is. We married in 1969 and went to Melbourne for nearly 3 years, and that was a great time. We loved it there, and the only reason really we came back is because we planned to come back when we left, and we came back. And my father had sounded out a few pharmacies round about, and so he pointed me in the direction of one in Wadestown and Wellington, which probably in hindsight I should really have come back and worked for a while here before I did that, because we were there for 11 years, and although we absolutely loved it, it was a brilliant place to work, brilliant place to start our family, all three children. Jane, our oldest daughter, was born in Melbourne. The other three were born in Wellington. So while it was a brilliant place to be, it wasn't a good business, in fact doesn't exist anymore, it closed up about 10 years ago. But the man that had it before me, he was a very good operator, David Donald, and there was no room for expansion at all. So after about 10 or 11 years, I decided it was too small and time to move on, which brings my father back into the picture again, because I was looking around and the professional literature was there and all the advertising that, and I'd been looking all over the country for something. And my father, being an accountant and having some pharmacist clients, sounded them out, found out that Dennis Goldman was on the market, and so I finished up buying that. Once again, I probably bought a bit too small, but on the other hand, as it turns out, it's worked out fine. And we came back up here in 82, and we were there in Havelock Road until December 2000, when the opportunity arose to go into the medical centre in Havelock North, which we've been ever since, and which I've basically retired from in quite happy circumstances, I think. I suppose you should talk about the kids.
Well, let's go back to your school days and sports. Did you swim or play cricket?
In terms of sports, I tried everything, but I wasn't particularly good at anything. So I was probably, in terms of my peer group, I was probably better at swimming than anything else, I would think, because I used to swim a bit competitively in those days. But I played rugby, and as we all did in those days, and I had a lot of fun doing that. Wasn't too keen on tennis, because my parents thought tennis was a great game for everybody to play, which it is, no doubt. But in the hot, sweaty days, and I wanted to do something else, I had to play tennis to put me off a bit. So I didn't do that. Had a go at cricket, and as far as I'm concerned, cricket's one of those games, long hours of boredom, a bit like the army, long hours of boredom, and a few seconds of utter terror. So I was never much of a cricketer. But I tried a lot of things over the years, and I had a lot of fun with them. One of the sports I really did love was after I left pharmacy school, actually, and a chap, Peter Benson, was rowing on the Clyde River. And so I rowed there for a couple of years, and we went down to the New Zealand Champs down at Lake Waihole. Tony Bone was rowing in those days, mm-hmm. well known, and various other people. And I absolutely loved that. And so after almost semi-retired, I took it up again for two or three years, and then other things sort of got in the way, and so we just stopped doing that. But it was a great sport. So what sport did I enjoy the most? I suppose rowing, I think, would be the one. But I took it up too late. Yeah. What I went through was Ross Collins, who went to the Olympics, and pharmacy school, I mean. And there's one other, Mark Irwin, who's also, I think, went to the Mexico Olympics, I think.
It's never too late to take up something.
No.
Because it's too late when you're sitting there wishing you had a...
wishing you had a crack at it. Yeah, right, yeah. I decided I was going to get a motorbike when I was probably 20 or something. And I went about it, and they had this whacking great big something, I don't know motorbikes, but something great big, British, enormous, huge, heavy thing. So I hopped on this thing, drove it straight through, a fig bush fell off, and that was a stony. I have ridden bikes since, but there's a little jack drive set of it. That thing must have weighed as much as a small car, because it's huge.
Coming back, where did Anne grow up?
Anne grew up in Hastings, so she went to Raurika School, I think it was, mm-hmm. the primary school, and then Hastings Girls High. And as I said, she left school early because she was going nursing, didn't need a higher qualification. But to do pharmacy, you needed, I think it was physics and biology or something, but she didn't have that. And so when Rosie Latty, as she was at the time, said she was doing pharmacy, why wouldn't she join? And Anne decided that's a good idea. She had to go back to school, and she was actually stood up by, I won't mention the headmistress, because she's a highly respected headmistress. Anne was stood up and said, this is the girl that couldn't make up her mind in assembly, which Anne's never forgotten and never forgiven her for. Yeah, that old girl died not too many years ago, quite recently. Yes. But she got through pharmacy school and, as I say, did her apprenticeship and Ian Kerr. And she's never actually not worked, so she's always had a small job. At the moment, she's got a bigger one than me. But when our kids were born, we've got four children, three boys and a girl. She always kept it morning a week somewhere or something like that, which gave her a bit of pocket money and kept her hand in. And that actually was quite useful, because what happened to me, when I first came up from Wellington, we inherited one of the staff who finished up rubbing us blind, nearly put us out the back door. And we all went broke. And so it's the only time we've had a cash check and bounced and so on. But with a bit of family money and Anne going back to work, which she did, at that time she'd been doing some voluntary work at Cranford, and Cranford decided they needed to have paid pharmacists, which actually they insisted on being paid anyway. And so Anne had a 24-year career in Cranford and finished up with New Year's Honour and had a fellowship in the Pharmacy Society and so on for the work she did. So she jumped. So it's funny what comes out of bad things. I always think of that Kipling poem, if one of the stanzas is, meet those two great impostors, triumph and disaster, treat them both the same. And out of that disaster, actually, Anne's had a very distinguished career in our field since then. And so it took us about 7 years to get out of that patch. So about 8 or 10 years ago, the Cranford board, and I would regard as ignorance, decided they're going to set up a specialist, to have all the specialists in Cranford. that they didn't take any notice of the then culture, and basically they blew the place apart. And that's why Cranford was closed up for 6 months, and it was closed up whenever it was that it happened. Mm. But as it happens, Sue Ward, who was on planning and funding, there's two Sue Wards in Hastings Hospital at the time, and the one involved in planning and funding knew a man, and they wanted to set up a, and I gather it was one of Kevin Snee's ideas was, from England, was to introduce pharmacists into general practices, because the feeling is that the GPs are trained to diagnose, fair enough, they're trained to chart a course of action, fair enough, they have their sort of set drugs that they tend to use because that's what they're familiar with, but their knowledge of pharmacology was poor, it was very poor, but they didn't necessarily recognise it. And so Kevin Snee wanted to set up and introduce pharmacists into general practices, and so Anne was invited to do it. She started off with two pharmacists over four practices, Havelock here and Greendale and one or two others, and she set up two, and then after about a year or so, the powers would be discovered that A, they'd saved them $500,000 straight off, and they were getting better patient outcomes. Anne's problem at the start was the doctors didn't really recognise where their lack of knowledge was, because they'd always been one-man bands.
No,
so they were gone.
Right.
But after a while, they were there, and they were receptive enough to accept them into the practices, and then realise, hey, these guys did know something. So Anne retired from that after, I don't know, a few years, and then she was invited back again to expand it, because the ladies had taken over, hell of a nice woman, and I won't mention names because I'm very nice woman, very, very competent woman, super bright, but not a people person. And so what you needed to do was someone, Anne's got the skills, and she's got a PhD, and she's got all the skills, a record at Cranford, the doctors know, and she's a people person. And so they invited Anne back again to expand it. Now she's got eight, I think we've gone to the ninth person now, spreading between Hastings, Napier, Wairoa, and down to Waipapa, I think. And so it's highly successful. And so Anne's been pounding away that in theory it's 20 hours a week. It's yeah, right. 20 hours going on, whatever. But no, she's so enjoying it. She'll probably pull the plug about the same time as me. She's just doing 70. So there's a time to say, okay, time to move on, or time to let somebody else have a go, sort of thing.
So, children.
Children. Okay, we've got four kids. Jane was born in Melbourne, and so she returned to New Zealand, that's when she was 6 weeks old. And as happens often, medical families, we had a terrible accident, so Stuart came 14 months later. He turned out to be probably the most talented of our children. I wouldn't tell him that, but his face would get better. But he's a pretty bright cook. He's currently in Hong Kong with a family of three daughters, and I don't know whether he'll ever see him home, because his wife is Bolivian. And so while she doesn't want to go to Belinda, no way does she want to go back to Bolivia, but she's not too keen necessarily to come back here. She's a big city girl. She was a hell of a nice girl, international model, and absolutely gorgeous, but very practical. But she is a big city girl, so coming back to Havelock might be a bit sharp for it. But they have three small children up to about the age of eight, I think it is. Stuart was born in Wellington St Helens Hospital, as was Hugh, the next one, who's now just on 40, or just 41, I think. He met a young girl at university and married her, and they have two children. His job, I've never quite worked out what it is. I do know it's legal. It's just with documents. As I understand it, if you want to stand it up on your procedure or some sort of systems document written, he's the man for the job. And I wouldn't have thought there was a living in it. Apparently there's a huge living in it. And they're expanding into Melbourne, and goodness knows where else we're talking about, expanding into Singapore. And so what they do, it's all a bit of a mystery to me. His wife is, if you Google Jane Denton, you'll get the older Jane Denton, who's our daughter, who's an occupational therapist, but also you get the other Jane Denton, who's my daughter-in-law. She's an artist, basically, and she does, I don't want to call it tapestry, she does patterns and pictures with wool on canvas, and she's doing very well. And so they do very well, they live in Wellington. And the third boy, fourth child, is Alistair. He always wanted to be a vet. He's now 36 or 37. He always wanted to be a veterinary surgeon, and so he went to Massey to do that, but I think he's too busy chasing the high life of yours. And so he missed the cut, got a degree, went to England, and spent the next several years using his degree to move furniture and dig holes and things. And so came back, decided he still wanted to do vet, so went back to Massey, and when he was probably just about 30, she qualified as a vet. Worked in Hong Kong and in Wellington, and then decided he's going to set up in Clive. So he's in Clive, setting up his vet surgery there. And so he's just 12 months there, and at the moment it's going like a rocket. He worked briefly here for one particular company. Once again, I mentioned that it's not fair, but it wasn't a heavy experience. So he set up on his own in Clive, and with a bit of help from the old man, of course. I would have thought it would be too small, but it's actually worked.
Interesting, because Clive has never historically had it yet.
No, never.
But over time, Clive has grown.
Well, he reckoned that there was about 1,200 in Clive itself, about 2,000 or thereabouts go down Harmony to Tiawonga, and if you take Pakeha District, about 6,000. But he just commented to me just the other day that he's also now drawing for both Hastings, Havelock and Naked, because I suppose being on the road, and basically we're very fortunate with the place we bought, because as you come off the bridge you can see him coming this way from Napier. He's just behind the Woolmore, and he's probably the most prominent building there. And so he set up there, he went into partnership with a vet nurse to get established, which is not in a way that I'm entirely happy with. It never is. It's working very well, and I think it won't be too long before they'll have to employ someone to help him, because he's actually only just completing his first year, and so he's got to make time a couple of years, and he's got as much work as he can.
It's an area in society that's growing, especially small animals.
He's not too keen on the big ones, actually. He likes small ones. So they need men to look after the cows and the horses and things, but he's not so
keen. Yes, because once upon a time, our vets, which were always blue Callaghan.
He was the only one around, wasn't he?
That's right. He was a great friend of Snowy North.
Yes. And Helen Callaghan was a great friend of the same age as Anne. They were great friends too. The test and those. Everybody went to everybody else's weddings, you know. So there was a group of them.
And so travelling, obviously, you've done.
Yes, but we've done a fair amount. I'm a bit of a surprise. None of it happened really. Well, we certainly couldn't afford to with a family. Three boys went to Rathkill and Jane went to Woodford, so we were broke for a good many years. So we were that off our hands. And we started off and going to Tahiti. We've done that twice. And then sort of things started expanding. Anne had an aunt. She was a war bride, never had any children. And Bob, her husband, had been away from the war, and he shot at an awful lot, and he didn't want to leave. He was quite happy back in his room, he wasn't going anywhere. So Anne was asked, would she accompany Joan? So the first trip, I think, must be 20-something years ago. She went to Hawaii with her, and then subsequently to England. Anne professionally went to England after that. And then seen Stuart's in Hong Kong. We've done Hong Kong many times, and as a family, we try to get there once a year, and they try to get back here at least once a year. And so we've been to the UK, France a couple of times. A couple of years ago we went up through Central Europe. It was great if you got something to go to. We had a wedding to go to in Czech, and that was great. And then we carried on up to Berlin and around there. On one occasion, about the time we had been in trouble, I desperately needed a holiday. Anna just started off basically a prison job, so she couldn't get a holiday. So I went with Humanity, and I went to Cambodia with them. That was the winter of Sam Weep, and we went out to the country. That was very interesting. And we did China a couple of years ago, and India last year, which is almost exactly 12 months ago, in fact, I think we were way 12 months ago. And boy, that was an experience. We were very fortunate. Anne has an English cousin who goes to India several times a year and buys up ethnic stuff and takes it back and sells it in various venues in England. So she knew the Indian wraps pretty well. So we accompanied them. We did all the touristy things, but we also did a lot of stuff in the average tourist we were going to. And I think because of that, we enjoyed that trip more. Don't get me wrong, the Chinese trip was a great trip. It really was a great trip. Thoroughly enjoyed it. But Indian one was better.
What about New Zealand? Do you have any favourite areas you keep going back to?
Well, as a child, we used to spend a lot of time in Paparam and Waikanae. My brother-in-law had a place in Waikanae. But we tend to get round there. The only bit of New Zealand I haven't visited is in the Catlins down the South Island. They keep saying, Dan, we must do that, see the country before they see the world sort of thing. But I have a sister in Whangarei, and so we get up there on very rare occasions. And we have an apartment in Wellington, and has a very dear friend of mine, and various other people. In some ways, although we've been here for 30 years, she's never even left. So after much resistance, I resisted for years and years, and then eventually an apartment came up on the terrace, which I couldn't say no to. So we bought it, and spent the next 10 years we've been renting it out so we could keep the thing. So finally, we got past that, and so we go down. We probably go down to Wellington more than go anywhere else. And when she did a PhD, she got a master's degree in primary healthcare in Adelaide and did the extramural in Adelaide. And then she did a doctor of pharmacy through Auckland University, and so she spent a lot of time up there. So while I was a bit stuffy about Auckland, it was never really keen, but I must admit I started to warm to it a bit. After 5 years of Anne going up there and being a company her on occasion, I started to warm to Auckland a bit. But I reckon we live in the best country in the world, probably the best part of the best country. So I'm perfectly happy to hear. So well, Anne wants to go to work quite a lot. I'm perhaps doing the days
of. You've got the best of both worlds, haven't you?
Well, yeah. We have, and we're very lucky with the Wellington apartment because there's body court fees and all that sort of stuff. And just so happened by a series of coincidences, the lady that works for the Public Service Association, she wants it Wednesdays and Thursday nights every week for most of the year. And the public service pay for her. She's absolutely fanatically tidy. And so she has a suitcase that she keeps in, and there's one cupboard that's assigned to her. Otherwise, I wouldn't know she was there. And so she pays the public court fees. So the arrangement is that we can bounce her any time we like. But as it happens with Anne working, we tend to go down for weekends. Weekends and the days are either side of the weekend. So the Wednesdays and Thursdays, with only one exception over several years, has been free for us. So it's worked out ideally for both sides.
Now, historically, you must have seen some major changes in the pharmaceutical.
Oh, it's a different game. It's fundamentally a different game. When I started off, well, the year before I was there, 2 years before, everybody went around an apprenticeship, which was night classes and go down to Wellington for block courses, things like that. I think I was the third year intake, and it was a pressure course, the first year, which was taken up in non-pharmaceutical matters, and the 2 years apprenticeship, and basically, they gave us a little bit of what pharmacology, which is the action of drugs. Pharmacognosy was the recognition of raw drugs, like in the herbal stuff and so on, and a bit of pharmaceutical chemistry. But really, it was a pressure cooker course, which, as much as anything else, told us how to make suppositories and make up emulsions and that sort of stuff. Now, I haven't made a suppository in 20, 30 years. The old pharmacist was basically the doctor's cook. And the RX sign, the Arecapase sign, the doctors always do, it actually spells recipe, and that's the recipe what the doctor wanted, and then we would make that. And so, to a degree, and it was dying, and in fact, I had to see a doctor of a certain matter while I was doing it, and he said, what on earth are you doing pharmacy? It's finished. And to a degree, he was dead right, because we just don't make the stuff anymore. Yeah. But, so then we spent probably a good chunk of my career being a profession looking for a job, or an answer looking for a question, really. But really has been answered by, in a sense, what Anne's doing now, in as much as the clinical knowledge of the young pharmacists coming through, the technical clinical knowledge. Now, they wouldn't have a clue how to make things. In fact, we've got a young pharmacist who came in. She managed to break two, put them in the microwave, managed to break two mortars in a measure. A very short order of time at a vast expense. Because she really didn't know how to make things. Whereas that's fundamentally what we were taught. But her technical knowledge of the pharmaceutical side just knocked me out of the pan. And so it is a different game. And the way the pharmaceutical field was going, when I started off, when I first owned a pharmacy, they used to have girls who'd come as a shop girl, usually reasonably bright, and after a while, you know, small business, they would show a bit of an interest. So they'd probably type a few labels, something like that, or be able to pharmacist unpack stuff. And they gradually worked themselves into the dispensary, being a helper of the dispensary, which was probably technically illegal at the time, but anyway, that's what happened. And in recognition of that, the powers that be set up a pharmacy technician's course. And so we started training these girls to certain minor technical matters, put it that way, so they could actually read a prescription. So it gave them a certain amount of legality and authority. And that has actually expanded over the years, expanded. And so nowadays, they're looking at fragments like, everything in my day always was the pharmacist responsible for everything. Nowadays, they're reaching the point where they're getting, this is just starting out now, it hasn't really got underway yet, but having checking techs who are trained to the point where they check other people's work, that sort of thing. And so many of those technicians will be almost full circle back to where the old apprenticeship type pharmacist was, because they do block courses. What they do is probably, I wouldn't say it's too far from what I had to do in my 2 year full time course in Batonia. I did my course in Batonia and the tech there. But, and so the idea is that the pharmacist, when a prescription comes in, the idea is that the pharmacist will check it, sort of vet it, make sure everything's all right with the mix of the drugs they're on and so on and so forth, and then possibly, or even probably, pass it over to a technician to actually do the job. And because in very little manufacturing now, very little manufacturing.
Computerisation must have played a major part
in
being able to record and record histories of your clients as well.
Absolutely fundamental. Back start, I probably had more involvement than most of them in computers. And back, the first time I struck it was back in 1974 or 5, when it first came out, and people said, what on earth do you want a computer in the pharmacy for? And it really was like that. That particular one was an online system, but the personal computer revolution killed that one. For a while, as you say, it was the speed and accuracy of prescriptions and record keeping, because we used to have to record everything longhand in a book, which I'll tell a story, and that one is, my first pharmacy I ever managed was in Willis Street in Wellington, in the corner of Smith Street and Willis Street. It doesn't exist anymore. And my grandparents had built where Dixon Street joins the terrace, where they built. And they obviously patronised them because I got hold of books. I wish I'd stolen them. Actually, one of them was cannabis cigarettes from my great-grandmother. Well, it hasn't been. No, cannabis cigarettes.
So that would have been 50-odd years ago.
No, 100 years ago. She died about 1920. And I wish I'd stolen that book. It was 1967 or 68 or something like that. And so that was talking 50 years prior to that. And she was the strictest Methodist. So she's probably smiling at the time. But apparently my great-grandfather, he was, as people were at the time, a strong churchman, but not like her. And apparently, his mother had actually been a publican at part of the time in England. And apparently, he never drank except at Christmas time. He'd call the maid, or had a maid. They'd call the maid, a little tipple of brandy, please. And apparently, my great grandmother was very sniffy. Anyway, nowadays, we can't. It's getting more and more and more involved. Even since I basically retired, the expansion is huge. We look after a number of rest homes, and with the exception of one now, the doctor goes in there, basically writes his prescription on the computer. We get that immediately, and so we don't have to wait for paperwork.
Sure,
or anything like that.
Yeah.
Ultimately, there has to be a paper trail then, so ultimately the doctor has to write a prescription.
Certainly.
But we act on that, and so the rest home notes and our notes, they're the same notes, and so the communications and that sort of thing. There were one or two fish hooks. One night, I've got a senior tech, Tracy Coles, who I've got a lot of time for. She picked up a major hole in the system, which she rang them and told them about, and they said, no, it can't be so. It was there, all right. Because nowadays, when you type something, they'll come up with incompatibilities. This isn't good with that, or whatever. They just warn you. So the doctor will have the same thing. But I sit down. One of the few jobs I still do is when I go in on a Thursday, there's a stack of notes from various rest homes, and I go through those notes, checking for incompatibilities. But as I said, my training is probably not the, okay, I've been in the game for 50 years, you know, I've got a bit of knowledge, but I always, always put the mix through whatever they take it through the New Zealand formula to see what pops up.
I suppose having systems like that, anyone can step in, as long as they keep using the same system, not being mistakes.
Well, I wouldn't say there's no mistakes, but you see, we've got a robot, we've got a dispensing robot there, which is not a little man with a little, it looks like a broom cover, but there's a dispensing robot, and it spits the mixes out like a long ribbon with all the pills in them, and every one of those little, like a series of pillows, every one of those pillows has to be checked, because it's a long, long time since I've seen a medication error as such. The girls are very good at loading things right. It's a long time since I've seen that. But the machine will put an extra one from time to time, or will put through a broken one, or it'll be messed up. So each of those little wallets has to be checked. And that's one of the boring things I do with them, actually. So, but certainly, if the computer system, currently, if the computers blow up, we blow up.
Tell me, what is an apothecary?
It's just another name for pharmacist. Well, an apothecary probably has more the manufacturing connotation, should we say, but I think it's just a language. If you go to, and I've seen it in Czech and Berlin, you'll see through that Central Europe anyway, you'll see apothec. It's the same word, apothec. It's a synonym, except that pharmacy is a registered name. In fact, every now and again you get somebody who'll open up a health food shop and call it a pharmacy, and they get wrapped over the knuckles very quickly. It's the same. So when you think of apothecary, it's more old-fashioned. I don't sort of think of someone with a witch's hat on, that sort of thing. But I think it's probably just more of a Germanic name.
Now, is there anything else that you think is worthy of your...
I think I've talked an awful lot, haven't I? So
the book that you did, that will be printed, and because it fills in detail, we really have a very full history, which is wonderful. We also have your voice talking about the family things.
Yeah, yes. Well, I like to say is that, as I said in the book, my parents' marriage was a very long and happy one, even if it was a bit fiery from time to time. And in my marriage has been long and happy, and we're not quite so far, I don't think. But if you never have an argument, there's something wrong. So
yes,
but no, it's all been good, actually. So life's been good to us. Mind you, you work at it, don't you? So you don't sit and wait for everyone to come to you. You've got to go out and meet it.
That's right. Well, thank you very much, and thank you for the opportunity. All the best for all the years you've got looking out on this grand view.
Yes, so we love it. We bought it for the view. You really could pop the house into subdivision anywhere and it's another house. We bought it for the same, and also why we've got that window there.
You bought the outdoors indoors, haven't you?
Yeah, that's right. It lends itself very well to winter and summer living. It's not a hot house in the summer, but now it's a cold winter.
Well, it's sheltered from the south.
Those are not the original doors when we came here, but those doors were put in by previous people to say you could heat that house. They're trying to heat the lot. You think with all this glass it would get cold in the winter, but Anne and I like to think we'll be here to go out with our feet first sort of thing, but whether it's practical I don't know, but we'll Time will tell.
Thank you, Ross.